Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Well, I am from the street, but I'm not from the street that much. I mean, I'm from a street. It's a cul-de-sac. It's called Oneida Court. A lovely place. Not a place you'd like to live, but fun to visit. I'm JP, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and we're one of the oldest independent publications in the U.S., distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. We also feature monthly columns on things like beer and CD reviews of local artists and national ones as well. In this episode, we're going to be speaking with The Devil Whale, learning about Provo's Soundcheck series, and finding out about Cathedral Tattoo. The Devil Whale is an indie rock band from Salt Lake City, a collaboration between longtime friends Brinton Jones on vocals, guitar, Jake Fish on bass, and Cameron Runyon on drums. The band's had a changing lineup for years, and in 2010 they rounded out the five-piece with Ren Kennedy on keyboard and Jamie Tim on guitar. Their debut album was Like Praters, released in 2008, and followed up by the Young Wives EP in 2010, and last year the group released their second full-length album, Teeth, followed by a U.S. tour. And the band has been invited back to South by Southwest for the second year in a row. I'm currently joined by Brinton. Thanks for coming by, Brinton.
Thank you for having me.
You've got an official South by Southwest showcase coming up at the Loft on the 14th, along with a few other shows down in Austin. What are your thoughts on heading back to Texas?
Well, I'm excited about it, to get back to some warm weather for one. We had a great time last year. Last year we did it kind of in the middle of a three-month tour, and so it was just kind of like a vacation for us in the middle of all the rest of that. And so we're just looking forward to going back. It's a chance for us to see some friends we don't see too often. So we keep the expectations pretty low and just go to have a good time.
You're probably excited about seeing a few bands down there. Who are you interested in seeing?
I haven't really looked through anything yet, so I don't know. Actually, that's one of the things I like going to the festival the most for. And I think all of us in general, we really like being able to go and see a lot of bands that we don't normally get to see, you know, in Salt Lake City, whether it's because those acts don't ever seem to come here, or because we're gone all the time, we miss a lot of shows here. So we just look forward to going to a lot of music. So it's not that I'm not interested in that, I just haven't, as with most things in life, I just haven't gotten around to looking yet.
It's the story of our lives,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
So much stuff. How is it different playing South by Southwest than playing elsewhere?
Well, there's just, parking is harder, and loading in is harder. Stuff like that, you know, is the most immediate difference.
Are you being serious?
I am being serious, yeah. I mean, to be honest, for us, like our showcase last year, other than those two things, it was kind of like a normal show. Just there's some people there, not packed, and that's about it. But that's fine, you know. That's if it was too much, you know, of a spectacle, it might freak us out a little bit. This year we're doing a lot more shows. Last year we just did the one official showcase and then a house show with some friends. And this year we're doing five or six. So we'll see.
I want to talk a little bit about your songwriting right now. You seem to write from the place a lot of musicians create from in terms of how your songs are formed, but you add a little something extra. Can you talk about the mindset you're in when you're composing, when you're working on songs?
What's the extra? What do you think is a little extra?
I would say it's something called Brinton Jones' heart.
My heart. I mean, a lot of times I feel like my best ideas are ones where my mind is more clear. I walk a lot. I go on a lot of walks, especially in the mornings. And a lot of times that's where ideas start, is in my walks. And then I get home and, you know, I make a lot of notes on my phone as I'm walking. And I get home, I try to figure out how that would sound on a guitar or whatever, and I guess go from there. But it's not I don't get into like a zone or anything, you know. I don't like light candles and Instagram my journal or anything.
Are you a night owl? Would you call yourself a night owl?
Less and less as I get older. I still like to stay up all night on occasion.
Right.
But I enjoy the mornings.
I've recently come across some research that suggests that people do a lot of really good creative work in the morning sometimes, especially if maybe earlier times in their current times in their life, they like to stay up late at night. Something about creating music in the morning.
I really enjoy it, yeah. A lot of my friends do too. I know David Williams, I'm sure you're familiar with. He's actually playing guitar with us now. We'll be on this trip. He's the same way. Like mornings, when we get together to run stuff, it's always, you know, 11 a.m. Which I know isn't early, but that's like the third thing of the day, you know. It's not
right.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people think, oh, musicians, they're just writing songs early into the morning, but you're getting your, you know, solid 8 hours, waking up, taking walks.
I try to, yeah.
Doing the papers, crossword maybe, Sudoku? Are you getting that old, Brinson?
No, not that old. Our bass player loves Sudoku, though, so I guess he's that old.
The truth will out. You played KEXP Studio last August. How was that performance in terms of your overall experience touring?
That was probably the most nervous I've ever been for anything, to be honest. But it was very, yeah, definitely one of the most memorable things we did last year, which was a busy year for us. But we were pretty excited to be invited to do that. Like, I consider that to be a high honor. Especially not being from the Northwest, like, we were really, really excited to be able to do that. So it kind of, it's just like everything else, that something we looked forward to for a couple months, and then one day it was over, and that's that.
I looked forward to the performance as well. Once I heard you're going to be on one of my favorite radio stations, I thought you did a really good job. And during that performance and interview, you said that coming from Salt Lake doesn't get you, quote, a ton of immediate respect, end quote. Is that changing for the Devil Whale?
No, I mean, I think. I don't think, I definitely didn't mean it in a way that people necessarily expect less out of you, but especially through things like, you know, South by Southwest, or I guess a lot of festivals, that there's a huge perk to be a part of a strong community that has a lot of national respect. And a lot of the showcases, you'll see that South by Southwest will be assembled by a community, you know, Chicago bands or Seattle bands or Los Angeles bands. And Salt Lake, we don't have as many bands traveling, you know, because we're a smaller city. So it doesn't necessarily, being from Salt Lake, doesn't necessarily command a ton of respect instantly, but I feel like, you know, people definitely, over time, there's a lot of Band of Annuals fans out there, and then even, you know, Provo band now, Desert Noises, that travels a lot. Spell Talks traveled a lot. And we tend to play a lot of the same venues, and overall, these bands tend to make good impressions on the venues, and especially personality-wise. And so that does help. I think people, more than maybe not, don't respect it initially, but they like to learn that there's a lot of cool bands in Utah, you know?
Well said. I didn't think originally, for the record, that was derogatory at all.
Yeah, right. I didn't.
But, you know, there's something to be said for that first initial impression that people might have. It maybe makes you want to work harder, or it gets more out of the performance. I don't know.
For us, from our perspective, being from a smaller town, we didn't necessarily have the same expectations of some bands. And, you know, for instance, Seattle, where we have a lot of friends, it seems like a lot of newer bands really feel like they have an opportunity to sign to a label, you know, and they do. Because they know, you know, they go out drinking with guys that work at these labels and stuff. And so it's more prone to have a good in. And we've always known we don't have that. And so we're just kind of like, well, we'll do what we can, and all you can do. In the meantime, we've got a lot of good memories out of it.
Well, judging by the performance on KEXP, you picked up a lot of new fans from that around the nation, probably. People getting excited, you know, marking it down on their South by Southwest calendars. They got to check out the Devil Whale.
I heard them. Yeah.
It was a really good session, and you have a good sound when you're playing live. How do you guys get that tight of a feel? Is it a vibe, or do you have to practice at it? How does it come about?
I think it's, yeah, just repetition like anything else. So I don't know how many shows we did in 2011, but it was, you know, around 150 or 160, 70 or whatever.
That's repetition.
Yeah, so, and then, you know, not to mention all the practices, like some of these songs, I imagine we've played them close to 1,000 times, so.
Fortunately,
we're ready for some new ones.
Now you need those calluses. Can I check those out?
Yeah. I mean,
like steel, listeners at home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm a real shredder.
And what's next for the Devil Whale?
This trip, South by Southwest in March, we're going to do another West Coast trip, or beginning of the summer, end of the spring. Late summer, early fall, plan on trying to get another record close to being done. So,
are you going to record in Seattle again?
We're not sure yet what we're going to do. Still kind of, it'll depend on our financial state and stuff like, mostly that.
And here's a curveball, because we've been talking about the Devil Whale the whole time. What's next for you personally?
I guess I don't know.
You're so busy you can't even think about yourself?
No, I just kind of waiting to, you know, get some of these things, you know, I guess one thing at a time. So just got a lot to figure out what's going to happen. So trying to plan out the next year or so, but a lot of it, like I said, hinges on what kind of resources we have, how much time people have. We obviously, with all the touring we did last year, we're all really broke, so we're built back up the reserve, as they say, you know.
I asked that, I was hoping, anticipating maybe like you did earlier even, that you would say that you're pretty much involved in the band, and that's true. You're your band is kind of like your life, right?
Oh, for sure.
What you do.
Yeah, I live in a stairwell right now. I haven't had a bedroom in over a year. Tried to eliminate as many expenses as we can in our personal lives because it's not cheap out there. It's a Ponzi scheme, as Rick Perry would say. Music, being in a band.
Thank you for that. Yes, thank you for bringing the politics back into it. We're about to play a song off your 2011 album, Teeth. It's called Barracudas. Do you want to talk a little bit about the recording and the writing process?
Yeah, I guess when writing that one, Jake and I went up beginning of 2009 to play a wedding for a friend of ours in Alaska. When we were supposed to fly back, the Mount Redoubt exploded. That was a big national. Anyway, so our flight got delayed about, you know, kept getting delayed another day or two. You know, the airport shut down for, so we were up there an extra 4 or 5 days, and I demoed a bunch of new songs because we were getting ready to do this, and Barracudas is one I finished up there and demoed. We recorded it at Studio Litho with our friend Sean Simmons, and yeah, just the final result.
So we're about to play that song, but thank you, Brenton, for coming by and sitting down and talking.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Here you go. It's Barracudas off of the Devil Whale's 2011 album, Teeth.
I took my clothes off and tried my best to be a sponge. I sat and waited for the rain to come. I went home empty. I went home drunk. Photographer, he was sleeping, and I was a wolf. Your neck was open, and my teeth were born.
The Devil Whale will be playing their official South by Southwest showcase at The Loft, Wednesday, March 14th at midnight. For more information on the band, touring info, and to buy their music, visit them online at thedevilwhale.com. The Soundcheck series is a monthly music exposition series in Provo. It provides an educational and networking experience for local musicians, songwriters, and music professionals from Utah. It also provides biannual expos featuring national talent, publishers, and performers, giving people opportunities to learn and grow as musicians. Slugwriter Isha B talks with series founder and executive director Russ Dixon.
You started the program. When did you start it?
We actually started it back in 2006, I believe. We ran it for about a year, and we didn't have enough funding to keep it alive because we were paying these presenters to come in from Nashville and New York and LA, and we just ran out of money. So we did it for a year, and it was a great experience. We had a lot of positive reaction, but we didn't have enough money to keep it going. And so we shut it down for a few years, and then recently the program was picked up by a nonprofit organization called the Legacy Music Alliance. And their mission is to get instruments into schools and to help inspire young people with music. And they see this program as a fantastic offshoot of that.
I love that.
To inspire singer-songwriters, people that are more in the pop mainstream genre.
That's so close to my heart too. That's like my favorite programs around town, like a music garage and the School
Spy
of
Hop.
Rock and Spy Hop.
Sure.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. That's cool to know that that's kind of like the adult extension of that, right?
Exactly.
Very cool. All right. So, we're already chatting about when and why the Soundcheck series was created. So, just going further into that, what are the goals and ambitions? So you want to help put music into people's lives and help them expand their goals? Or?
That's right. I think you being a singer-songwriter yourself, I think
we were chatting.
You would understand that all of us, and I am as well. I'm a writer, I'm a singer-songwriter, guitar player, and as you know, we get into this music business, and there's so much more business to it often than there is music.
Totally.
And it can start to squash our creativity or make us feel like we don't know what the next steps are going to be. I see a lot of talented people here locally that I think have amazing talent that could be doing so much more with their music if they just had a little bit of navigational knowledge to get through the business itself. And so that's the mission of Soundcheck, is to educate artists and help bring people in from Nashville, from New York, from LA, people that are working in the music business every day.
To kind of chat about what it is that makes it a business instead of a just like a weekend project. Or
exactly, because I think a lot of us as artists, we think, well, if we start to make this all about business, then it's going to lose the art and I'm not interested. But there's the flip side of that coin to say, if this is something we want to do all the time, it has to be a way to pay the bills. And so we have to figure out how to get that check in the mailbox. And that's a big mission of Soundcheck, is to teach people how to monetize their music career, how to just be thinking about registering with PROs, so when their music gets licensed on a TV show, how are they going to get paid for that, or how to market their music online with all the new social media tools. And for a lot of us artists, we're just like, whatever, I just want to write.
I know, you see me spacing out, I'm all PROs, performance rights, organizations,
blah, blah, blah. And that's why a lot of artists end up going with the record label, because those people take care of all that.
They'll do all of that stuff for you.
But the record labels are dying and getting smaller now, and so the artists themselves have to take care of a lot of that.
Which is a cool opportunity too, right?
Right.
In and of itself. That's where it's at.
Yeah. It's not for everyone.
Sure.
It's not. You know, to run your own music business, how many artists do you know that love
to run? You just take
run
out the word music, and that becomes the question. Did you want to run your own business?
Right.
Because that's what it ends up being.
It does.
What are the kinds of people that you want to invite to these?
Obviously, they're open to anyone. We invite people from the music industry all the way down to artists and writers themselves. But the main focus for the workshops is for the singer-songwriter.
Awesome.
So somebody that's writing their own music and typically performing their own music as well.
Very cool.
We have the most tools for those people.
Right on. Well, that is good to know.
Singer-songwriters. Yeah, any genre, though. It could be the things we're teaching about at the workshops aren't genre specific. So if you're in a punk band, if you're in a folk band, if you're hip hop, if you're classical musician, but you're writing and performing your own stuff, the tools that you'll get at these workshops will apply to all those genres.
Sure. Well, it's kind of cool now to learn about this legacy.
Call it LMA.
The LMA background to this, because one of my questions was, is this Utah only, or are there other regions served by the program?
Right now, the LMA is still in Utah.
Very
the Legacy Music Alliance.
Lucky us.
And it's just starting. And so Soundcheck has been a physical event that you attend in person, whether it's the big expo events that we do twice a year or these monthly workshops.
Sure.
You physically have to go to them. And some of our goals for growth in 2012 are going to start including some online content that's going to reach out and do interviews similar to what you and I are doing right now, either via Skype or other
web tools
to interact with other music professionals and get that content delivered to our membership, to the Soundcheck.
You've been operating for a couple years, so maybe chat about a couple of the workshops that you've had.
We've had at the workshops all different kinds of presenters, everything from life coaches. We had a gal come in from LA, and she coaches a lot of the big artists and stars in LA. She kind of coaches them through some of their artist junk. And that was probably one of our most popular workshops, which was surprising because we didn't talk anything about music.
It's not quite as tangible, but at the end of the day, is anything in art really that tangible? You know what I mean? It's all emotional. And
it was. There was so much to be had from that.
That's cool.
I think our membership really just tuned into that, of how they can empower themselves by just thinking differently and approaching their careers in a more emotionally healthy way.
That
was very helpful. We've had all the way from that, where it's a little more ethereal, touchy-feely, all the way to the other side where, you know, we brought in a professor from the Berklee School of Music, and his name was Bob Baker, and he teaches a music business class.
How extraordinary to get somebody like that out here for people. That's very cool.
He came out and gave a fantastic workshop about how to use online resources and all the new social media tools, and he was awesome.
Love it.
So we've had guys like that. We've had, you know, we like to bring in people that are in the industry out there moving and shaking. We brought Tyler Glenn from the Neon Trees.
He was
one of our recent presenters. Fantastic talent. You know, just he had just come off the night before. They were opening for Duran Duran at the Madison Square Garden.
They're doing such fun stuff right now. That is so exciting. And that's another thing that we were chatting about with the North Platte guys, was about how inspiring that can be then to have people from Utah achieving like that, because then it makes you realize that you can achieve like that too. It's just a question of actually putting the pieces into place, or knowing what pieces to put into place.
This is not just a jello state.
Right?
We've got lots to offer here.
That's exactly right.
I agree with you, Isha. I think there's so much viable talent here.
Yeah.
And we've seen that. You know, look at the shows like American Idol right now.
The Voice. We always have somebody.
Mm-hmm. Dancing with the Stars. I mean, there's always somebody from Utah.
When I go to a lot of shows in town, and I'm constantly, because I imagine to myself, oh no, by now I've seen all of the good bands in town, right? And then I go and I see another new band, and they are just as wonderful as the last band. And you know, and everybody's got a different skill or a different niche, but we just have so many amazing performers here. It's a little ridiculous. Future workshops. What do you guys have on the agenda?
We're starting a new strategy for 2012. Like I said, we're going to do a lot more online content that's going to come in. We're also going to keep doing our monthly workshop series. The big events that we get most excited about happen twice a year, and those are big all-day events. And upcoming for 2012, they're going to be two-day events where we bring in presenters from all over the country.
Very fun.
To critique songs and to give presentations, and those happen twice a year, and those are called our big expos, the Soundcheck Expos.
About when are those?
It's happened usually in April and October. So that's when our last one we held at Westminster College.
Oh, cool.
Which was great and real central for people, and then the one before that was up at Sundance.
Awesome.
Which was great as
well. That is great, Westminster is. And who did you have at the Westminster one? Because I feel like now I remember reading something about that.
Yeah, we had a fellow named Richard Harris come in, who's a hit songwriter from LA.
Yeah.
Big Christian songwriter named Scott Kerpane came in.
Oh, very cool.
And then we had a couple of local, I shouldn't call them local people, but who live here.
Locally spawned.
Live here but have had tremendous national success. Mary Beth Maziarz from Park City came and spoke, who's a wonderful author and also a writer and singer herself. And then Tyler Glenn, of course, made an appearance and also spoke to us at that event. And he was just riveting, you know. We were well schooled.
Yeah, when you watch people like that too, I think that maybe you do kind of get a sense for what it is about them that makes them so magic. You know what I mean? It's like you see them and you're like, ah, so I have to achieve this. I have to be magic like you. I see. Well, that's a challenge. So
that's a good point. There is something intangible about these people that have
McLow. There's
had
like
success.
A pulse. Has there been a positive feedback from a lot of the attendees, you know, from some of the songwriters? Have you guys had results or anything special that comes to mind?
You know, that's a good question. We actually just surveyed our entire membership just to kind of see what they're liking. You know, it's been a couple years now that we've been doing this, so we wanted to get a sense of what things they're liking, what they're not liking, what they want to see more of. And the feedback has been really positive. It sounds like some of the things they love the most about Soundcheck are, like you mentioned, the ability to network with other artists. When they get together at these events, they're meeting studio engineers, producers, managers, other musicians. And what's fun to see is there end up being whole bands created out of people that just meet at these Soundcheck events. Because they go, hey, well, you're a writer, I'm a bass player.
Absolutely.
I'm looking for somebody. So we've seen really cool collaborations come out of it. But the feedback's generally been just a chance to learn at this caliber right here in Utah. You couldn't pay $1,000 and get a meeting with some of the people that we bring in.
Yeah.
So just that ability to connect in a one-on-one environment. I mean, it's a small group, you know, it's 50 to 100 people every time we do these monthly workshops.
And it is, I mean, when I was there, it was open forum. You can ask the questions and, you know, take turns. So there's opportunity, absolutely, for you to ask the questions that you want to ask and have them, you know, discussed. So
When else do you get a chance to get so up close with somebody that's legitimately in the music business and can really teach you things?
That's a great combination for sure, with having so many like-minded people in a room and having these presenters and having that kind of feeling.
I think the whole vibe of Soundcheck is education-based. We want people to feel empowered by being smarter about their music. You know, it's not real formal education. Obviously, it's music, it's art, it's business, but there's still a lot of fun to it.
Yeah.
But we want people to feel empowered by coming to these and saying, now that I know what the roadmap at least looks like, now I can still choose to be my own free spirit and navigate it however I want to.
Sure.
But at least I know
I have a little bit of something to go off of.
Exactly.
For more information on the series, upcoming guests, and its programs, visit them at soundcheckseries.com. Time once again for our weekly daily calendar rundown. I'm joined today by Esther, as usual. Thank you for joining us, Esther.
Thank you for inviting me.
Also, you're an associate producer here as well as an editorial assistant.
That's correct.
I want to make that clear.
Thank you.
You're qualified to do the calendar.
I'm so qualified.
More than qualified. Do you want to start off the week for us then?
Yeah. First of all, we're starting on Tuesday, March 13th. We want to wish Rio Connolly, who's one of our copy editors and also a writer, a happy birthday. Happy birthday, Rio.
Yeah, happy birthday, Rio. There are a lot of birthdays this week, so why don't we jump ahead to Wednesday, March 14th. Happy birthday to Jake Vivori.
Yep, he's one of our Slug Games coordinators. Happy birthday, Jake.
Yeah, I knew how to pronounce his last name, by the way. It just sounded like I didn't.
No, you're
like
actually getting asking. Really good at these more ethnic-sounding accents.
I've been watching films. Mm-hmm. Yeah, ethnic films, ethnic-type films. Univision, etc. Let's move into Friday.
Okay.
Because Wednesday's completely tapped out. March 16th, it's happy birthday to Colby Takahashi.
Yep, he's also a Slug Games coordinator.
I've been watching Japanese movies.
I can tell.
So there you go. And there's going to be a music show on that day, Bar Deluxe.
Charles Ellsworth and the Dirty 30 CD release, along with Holy Water Buffalo as the openers.
A really good show.
It's local alt-country stuff.
And the next day, something completely different. Actually, the day after, Sunday, March 18th, Guttermouth.
Yep, Guttermouth is playing at Burt's, and they are infamous 80s punk band from Huntington Beach, California, which is one of the punk and hardcore meccas.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Esther. Well, tell me more about Huntington Beach. Is it centrally located on the California coast? That's delightful.
Yeah, it's a very nice beach town. Lots of surfing, I'm sure.
Let's talk about the iPhone app.
Okay, let's do that.
Because we know that. That's territory we're safe in.
Yes.
It's a really cool app you can download from the iTunes market or whatever the hell the iTunes thing is, the App Store.
Mm-hmm, the App Store.
Yeah. You can listen to our episodes and you can also read the magazine. It's more than just a Soundwaves app, although you can call us from that as well. It's access to our whole digital archive on slugmag.com.
Yep, and Soundwaves is right there on the homepage of the app. And you can click on it and it'll take you to our voicemail line and, as you said, our digital archives.
We have an event that's coming up, so that's kind of why we put it on the event calendar. We're very excited to have one of our writers, James Orme, interviewing Mike Ness of Social D. Social D is coming to town in May, I believe. And why don't you give people some more information about what we're doing with that, Esther?
So we're kind of trying a different angle for our coverage, and we're reaching out to our listeners and our readers and asking you to come up with some of the questions that you'd like to see James Orme, our writer, ask Mike Ness. So you can submit those questions by emailing soundwaves@slugmag.com, or you can call our voicemail line, which is
858-233-9324. We really would prefer a phone call because James likes to listen to people. We may be able to play him to Mike. We're not quite sure yet how that's going, but we love hearing your sweet, angelic voices. So leave us some messages, and we can use them just as well as your emails. Is there anything else to add for this week, Mr.
JP?
What?
I heard last week that you told Gavin that he did a better job than I did.
I didn't really mean that, though, actually. That was just because he was sitting in front of me. I'll say that to anybody that's sitting in front of me, Esther. You're doing a great job, better than Gavin. Thank you.
You're just so genuine.
I know, right? It's one of my better qualities.
All right.
What? I could run for office, says Angela H. Brown.
I hope Rocky Anderson knows that he met his contender.
I cannot talk as fast as that guy. I could never do it. But thank you for your vote of confidence, guys. And thank you, Esther, for joining me once more.
You're welcome.
Dwellers is a three-piece gut rock band from Salt Lake City. It features Joey Toscano on guitar, Dave Jones on bass, and Zach Katsis on drums. The band released a self-titled instrumental EP called Peace and Other Horrors in June of 2011, and this month the band released their debut album, Good Morning Harakiri. Here's the Dwellers' secret revival from their latest album. was Secret Revival from The Dwellers and their album Good Morning Harakiri. Dwellers will be playing South by Southwest on the Small Stone Showcase at the Headhunters Patio Friday, March 16th at 7 p.m. To read more on the band, check out our March 2012 issue in print or on slugmag.com, or find the band online at facebook.com/dwellersband. Cathedral Tattoo was founded in 2010, one of the shops that formed after Sugar House's 11th Street Electric Gallery closed. Cathedral took over an old music shop below Stone Ground on 400 South and features artists like Tyler Densley, Jake Miller, and CJ Fishburne. The shop has become a landing pad for visiting tattoo artists who come to town, and Cathedral has turned their back entrance into a gallery wall for local artists. Slug's editorial assistant, Esther Moronio, speaks to CJ about tattoos, his shop, and a collection he's putting together.
Do you want to kind of tell me about your own tattoo history first?
Well, I always wanted to do it since I was about 15, and that's when I got my first machine, not the most morally sound way. And I did a few tattoos, and they weren't the best thing, so I stopped. You know, I realized that they were terrible until I could find an apprenticeship, which happened when I was about 20 up here. I moved from Phoenix to here and worked for Jared Hayes for a few years, and then 11th Street, and then here, so 8-9 years total, right around there.
Cool. What made you want to become a tattoo artist?
As a kid, I always thought it would just be a way to not have a normal job, you know, stay on the outside of things, yeah, like a little bit. And it still is that, but obviously there's way more to it than just like hanging out, yeah, in a tattoo shop. But what keeps me interested is the fact that there are so many different angles to it, and that there's tattooing, there's the technical side, there's the artistic side, there's finding references, there's understanding the history, there's like always a new kind of tattoo or a new way or a bigger one, or a full body suit or a different idea on a different person. There's enough to never be bored. So.
Yeah, right, that's important to me too.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about this project and how it got its start.
The little museum we have going on, like the Salt Lake Tattoo Archive, I guess is what we're gonna call it, because we want to share it. Started in 2007 maybe. That's when I got my first older tattoo machine. I maybe had some acetates that somebody gave me before that, but it was a machine that I bought. They used to belong to Phil Sims. He was a guy that worked on the Long Beach Pike, which was Burt Grove's shop. That was the first like significant thing I bought. And then ever since then, it's just kind of been going and going. And the last 2 years has been like really strongly collecting stuff, things that are a little bit more important and a lot more of it. Stuff that I thought would, when I was starting, was completely out of my reach ever.
So do you have a method to collecting? I mean, are you looking for specific pieces then?
Yeah, kind of now. You know, because it has more value, or, you know, makes more sense the more continuity there is to it. Mm-hmm. So there are certain kinds of things that I'm specifically looking for now.
Okay.
You know, to go along with other stuff I have. If I have a lot of flash from a particular tattooer, mm-hmm, or I would like to then also get their machines and a travel kit and as much on them as I can, because who they were is as interesting as what they did, you know?
Yeah.
And that's hard to find out.
So tell me about some of these pieces that you collected. Are they mostly Salt Lake related?
There is a lot of like kind of roundabout Salt Lake connection stuff. One of my favorite things is it's a Rock of Ages painting that's by William Grimshaw, who was a, you know, tattooers in the 50s and 60s and whatever. He came over from England, I think. He was friends with Bert Grimm and kind of all the big people at the time. And the one that I have on the back is signed to Bert Grimm in the Bowery, New York, 62. And the cool thing about that, too, is the Salt Lake connection.
So some of it is related to Salt Lake?
Yeah, a lot of it comes back in some way, partially just because that's what I want to know about anyway.
Yeah.
And not very much is known about it, you know? It's kind of an accepted fact that he was here. There was another guy named Owen Jensen who ran one of the first early tattoo supply companies out of Chicago. And he was from Springville, worked on the railroad in Ogden. Got his first tattoo at the Buffalo Bill Wild West show, which would have been what's now Sandy.
Oh, cool.
By someone who may or may not have been heavily tattooed by Charlie Wagner.
Uh-huh.
I have lots of flash from the guy who taught him how to build tattoo machines.
How do you fact check all this stuff?
It's hard. I don't know. I mean, usually that kind of history is all oral history. Mm-hmm. So whoever you get it from usually knows something about it, or, you know. And then once you pick up that little bit of information, it always connects to something else you already know, or the next thing you find, or it's like a little puzzle. And then there's a handful of guys in the country who are really reliable sources on that kind of thing, and they'll double check. But if you look at a painting, the people at the time doing it, you can tell.
How do you tell whether it's, how do you verify that it's an original piece?
Oh, there's all kinds of stuff. I mean, you know, aside from like imagery that's really period dated, mm-hmm. the kind of paper that it's on, just the look of it, really how aged it is.
What made you get into this in the first place? Like, why is it important for you to kind of collect all of these pieces?
It's kind of magical. There's magic. Just having it around kind of is reassuring. You know, knowing that, like, nah, it used to be that everybody could trace some kind of lineage to, like, a tattooer, you know, an important one who taught this guy that taught that guy that taught you. And there's all kinds of lessons that are carried on there that are lost now when you don't have that anymore. Everybody just learns from whoever, so you learn things that have been known for ever,
yeah.
You know, but you have to rediscover them, and having that stuff around, it's another way to pick up those lessons, you know. I think that the short-term memory of people here, like, history-wise, is kind of a sad thing, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I would prefer to know.
I think it's a great legacy, because, I mean, like you said, it's just something that's handed down, and we really don't have that much anymore. How do you think that other people are going to react to all of this stuff?
I don't know. I mean, we had Nate Drew and CJ Starkey were down here the other night talking about the stuff for the convention, mm-hmm. and it was cool for me to see their reaction, because sometimes I get, you know, we all get used to having it in here, and then to read that on someone else's face is really cool.
Yeah.
But I definitely think it only appeals to a certain percentage of, you know, people that get tattooed, or mm-hmm. tattooers or whatever, that find that kind of stuff interesting, you know?
Yeah.
Because you can look at some of it and say, like, oh, that's not the most well-done thing ever. But it was done in 1920 before anyone else had ever done it, by somebody who was essentially just a craftsman. Mm-hmm. Now it's easy when, like, everything is available Google-wise.
Yeah.
That's another cool thing about that, actually, is that, like, in the world where everyone knows everything and you can get whatever information you want whenever you want, that's not always true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where do you find these pieces? Like, where are you mostly looking for them?
All over. But, I mean, most of that stuff is easier to find on the East Coast and certain parts of the Midwest and West Coast to a certain degree. But, I mean, you know, mainly all the tattooing then was going on the coasts, sailors and mm-hmm. stuff like that, or anywhere where people were traveling through really heavily. Here it was because of the railroad, kind of all over. And I correspond with a lot of people that find stuff in pawn shops and just anything.
So it's not just like, because most people, when they collect things, it's like eBay.
You're, yeah, I mean, stuff comes up on there sometimes, mm-hmm. but yeah, mostly corresponding with other people. And then, you know, you get to know them, and they're excited that you know, and they're like, oh yeah, I have this too. And so there's always packages and letters coming.
Cool. What plans do you have for this? I guess tell me about the connection to the convention and how you're setting it up here, and then I know that you are possibly doing Leonardo stuff.
Well, I mean, we're always going to have it set up here, and okay. we're still kind of in the process of doing that in a way that makes it easily understood by people, you know, where you can really look through it and see what's there. Mm. That's, I'm trying to catch up with the framing versus the collecting.
Yeah.
We did talk to Leonardo, Ben Wiedmeyer from the Leonardo, about doing something over there, just like a simple display of maybe photos and some acetates and stuff to kind of show how it all worked. I'm not sure when that's going to be.
Yeah.
It's kind of up to them, but it would be cool. I mean, even in that venue, to show people that maybe wouldn't come in here looking at it would be nice.
I know you said one of your favorite pieces is the Rock of Ages. What other pieces are you including in some of the stuff from different artists that you are really stoked about?
That is a good one, which I said was William Grimshaw, and then we have three sheets of flash of his that go along with it, and it's cool to see incredibly developed, like, oil painting versus his tattoo flash, you know. It's clear he could do whatever he wanted to do. And then probably we're going to have a lot of that Professor Barber stuff, which is the guy who taught Owen Jensen to build machines. And one of the most interesting things is definitely the photos. There's like 108 photos, acetate rubbings that go along with them, of mainly tattooers getting tattooed in like the late 50s, early 60s. Those are cool to look at, just to see like the people and how good the tattoos did look at the time.
Yeah.
Then to see the drawing full size that goes along with it. Yeah. Stuff like that kind of puts it in perspective.
Seeing all of this history and seeing all of that artwork, how do you think that tattooing has changed?
I mean, tattooing kind of trades hands all the time. If you look long term at the history, a small group of people will adopt it and refine it and own it and, you know, get tattooed and all that. And then another class of people will pick it up and also get tattooed and do what you will. And then it falls out of favor with the previous class. So it goes up and down like that all the time. So I think, you know, as popular as it is, that's great. It's not that different than what's happened in the past, except its information is more accessible, so more people can be into it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it kind of drops in and out of favor like that over time, which is a healthy cycle for it. It's a good thing. But I think right now is the first really, like, postmodern phase of tattooing where it can look back at its own history and determine what's valuable and what's not,
Yeah. Which
is part of being able to find this kind of stuff and all the other people out there doing that, you know, what was important, what did we do, what happened, because so little is really known. So then from here, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely gonna, like, keep getting more refined like that on certain levels.
Yeah.
For more info on the shop and the artists, visit them online at cathedraltattoo.com. Thanks for listening to another edition of Sound Waves from the Underground. Make sure you catch next week's episode, when we're going to be learning more about the Wasatch Roller Derby season, Festival of Colors, and local band Uncle Scam. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. Have you ever been to South by Southwest? Do you have any favorite memories from the festival you'd like to share with us? Send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message at 858-233-9324. That voicemail is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, regardless of what you'd like to talk about. We may just play you on the show if you give that line a ring, so call us up. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan, with associate producers Jeanette D. Moses, Ricky Vigil, Esther Moronio, and Jonathan Paxton. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis, with our main logo and art design by T. Doan, with technical design by Kate O'Connor. We'll catch you next time.